It's time for Youth Sports Now, the only radio show in Rochester dedicated to the excitement, the passion, the development, and well-being of young athletes. From peewee to college athletics, Youth Sports Now brings you expert advice and helps prep young athletes for the game and beyond. Youth Sports Now is sponsored by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester, helping your young athlete achieve their peak physical performance, and presented by McQuaid Jesuit, the area's only all-boys Catholic college prep school for grades 6 through 12, and by TJT Sports Photography, taking the winning shot every time. Here's the host of Youth Sports Now, the lifelong Little Leaguer, Greg Camp.
And a big Youth Sports Now welcome on this edition of our show, as our wonderful guest speaker and introducer and kind of jack of all trades, Bob Savage, said, Youth Sports Now is the only show in Rochester dedicated to the well-being of youth sports and the athletes who play the games, as well as their parents, the coaches, and the youth sports administrators. Well-being is certainly our dedication and our mission on this show, and that's what we're going to be talking a lot about today as we get into some topics that we've just touched upon in the past, and we hope to get into greater detail in this edition of Youth Sports Now. Hey, first of all, happy National Signing Day. Today is National Signing Day, and we want to congratulate all of our local athletes who have signed with colleges and universities across the country. It's a big day for college athletes, for high school athletes around the United States as they sign the letters of intent to the various colleges. And I know that here locally, we have had just a record number of athletes who have signed their letters of intent today, and they will be moving on to their athletic careers at various colleges, whether it be a Division I school, Division II, or Division III. You know what? That doesn't matter. The fact is that these kids have excelled in sports and academics, and they are going on to hopefully be very successful in life and very successful student athletes. And of course, I put that emphasis on student athletes. As we know, the student needs to absolutely come first. You know, coming up on today's show, we've got, of course, Mike Naparella, our good friend from Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training. Mike's got a whole bunch of stuff to discuss with us today, including a lot of questions that you, our listeners, have sent to us. Various questions, as we'll pick up some more topics on the ACL injuries and also get into a question about Tommy John surgery and some exciting things that Mike's got going on. He was a professor, Mike, today. He was a teacher doing some physical therapy teaching, which we'll talk about. And then also, he is doing some testing and training with the volleyball folks and talking about injury prevention. So we're going to get into all of that during this edition of Youth Sports Now. And the first thing that you know, we're going to be talking about is this whole concept of being cut from a sports team. You know, so many times in the past, we've only touched upon this. And getting cut from a sports team can be a very, very, very tough thing for a child or a teen to handle. And there are so many reasons why that we should reexamine maybe the idea of cutting kids at young ages. And of course, we're going to be talking to an expert in the field, no pun intended, on the field. And we're going to get some expert advice for parents and for youth sports administrators and coaches. But, you know, the practice of cutting athletes from middle or high school teams has really existed for at least 50 years. And next to concussions, probably, it is arguably one of the most controversial practices in youth sports. And we're going to be looking into that. A lot of proponents say that, hey, cutting a kid from a sports team is necessary to prepare children for an adult world where there are winners and there are losers. Well, what do you think? And we are going to hopefully get some great advice here. When we come back, we're going to have Dr. Michelle Karulis, who is from Adler University in Chicago. And she's going to be joining us with some great advice that we can help these kids get through the obstacles, the hurt, the pain of being cut from a sports team right when we come back on Youth Sports Now.
Tell a friend about Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM, 1040 AM, online at WYSL1040.com.
Standing in line, marking time, waiting for the welfare dime. job.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from your home. Where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family. Where evaluation, recovery, from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference. Call Peak Performance at 218-0240. That's Peak Performance. Performance 218-0240. We'll be expecting you.
Intellectually competent, loving, religious, open to growth, committed to justice. The words used to describe the young men who graduate from McQuaid Jesuit. Educating young men in grades 6 through 12, McQuaid focuses on the entire person, mind, body, and soul. There is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit. Why not find out for yourself? Go to McQuaid.org today to schedule your visit. That's McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
Little League is committed to the safety of its players, so background checks are mandatory for all volunteers. And that's why every local league gets 125 free national criminal background checks. Little League rules for a reason. For more info, go to littleleague.org.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
And we are back on Youth Sports Now. I am Craig Camp, your host for the next hour or so, and we are very happy and pleased to welcome Dr. Michelle Karulis, who is coming to us live on the Youth Sports Hotline. And Dr. Karulis, you are in Chicago, and we welcome you to Rochester, New York, and Youth Sports Now.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate being able to chat with you this evening.
Dr. Karulis, you know, we've been following you on Twitter, and ultimately that's how we tracked you down and got you to be on our show. You specialize in sports and health psychology in Chicago, and we have been talking for the past, couple of months, where we briefly, ever so briefly, touch on this subject about kids being cut from sports. And, you know, as I said in the intro, it seems as if next to concussions, it's this really hot topic now. And I'm just wondering, from the people you've spoken to and in the work that you're doing, why do you think the concept of being cut from a sports team is suddenly kind of coming to the top of people's minds?
Well, I think it's interesting because we have some generational gaps in the parents and in the coaches. So on one end, we have people who really believe in the philosophy of everybody gets a trophy and everybody participates. On the other end, we have people that you mentioned in your comments who think kids need to know early on that there is a definite winner and there is a loser. And right now, we're struggling to find that in-between place without having the kids get stuck in the middle. And right now, they really are stuck in the middle.
You know, Dr. Karulis, a lot of people in the youth sports administration, meaning, you know, all the national leagues, if you will, the youth leagues that exist, whether it be in baseball, football, hockey, tennis, golf, you name it, they talk about the fact that getting cut from a sports team can, and they emphasize can, be a lifelong, you know, issue and have lifelong implications on a child, especially if the cut happens at an early age. From your perspective and your expertise, what would you comment back on that?
I would agree 100% with the word can. The opportunity to play sports really opens up many things for kids, so they do learn teamwork, working with others, conflict resolution. But if they are only participating in sports and nothing else, and then they're cut from that team and don't have another outlet to interact with kids, it really is their lifestyle that's being threatened. So if a child has additional areas that they can focus on with sport, they are more likely to respond well or less hurtful when they are cut from that team. And that has a lot to do with what we call identity development. So when they are small children and then growing into adolescence, it's really important for their skills to be developed and nurtured and for the kids to be complemented when they're trying something. So, for example, in T-ball, we start off with the T and the ball and the different size bats, and then eventually we take several steps that move the kids as they grow to a baseball or a softball without that T. Now, as they're learning and they're being coached and complimented, they gain that confidence. But if they're being shamed and scolded for missing the ball, that confidence decreases. Their egos or their self-esteem become extremely sensitive, and then being cut from the team is just one more blow on top of that.
And Dr. Krulis, do you think that, you know, if kids are cut, especially again if we go through this early age, that potentially we can be cutting the kids who actually need sports the most? I mean, it seems to me that there's this sort of cruel irony that the children who are cut are usually the least skilled and the ones who have the least self-confidence and potentially in some cases may have child obesity issues or other types of physical issues. But yet we're cutting them, and it seems so cruel to me that these are the kids who get cut.
Well, yeah, that can be very hurtful because the kids that you just described maybe want to be involved in exercise or sports or something active, and they're not being given that opportunity. One potential solution to that is having a varying degree of leagues. So you can have recreational leagues where everybody on the team is guaranteed playtime, and you can have competitive and travel leagues where there are very serious tryouts and talent scouting, where everyone is not going to have a fair opportunity to play and everybody is guaranteed that they will not make the team. So it is important to think about when, as a parent, if you are having your child engage in sports, you want to think about what level best match your child's abilities, which sometimes parents don't accurately assess that. So for the kids who are your non-traditional sport participants, and when I say that, I mean kids who aren't as invested in going on the travel teams or having that high competitive edge and they just want to have fun with it, we need to have leagues to accommodate for that kind of environment.
We are talking to Dr. Michelle Krulis from Chicago, who is an expert in sports and health psychology. And we're talking about kids being cut from sports team, especially at early ages, and how it can affect them with either lifelong implications or not, and some advice on how we can get these kids through this. Dr. Krulis, one thing that came out in this goes way back now to 2001, a report to the Surgeon General found that teenagers who have weak social ties, that is, who are not involved in conventional social activities and may be unpopular at school, are at high risk of becoming violent or at least distant and having antisocial behavior. I certainly don't want to scare any of our listeners and the parents and coaches out there about having this antisocial behavior, but at the same time, it seems to me that, you know, being cut, that the jock culture is really creating some of this, the damage that is being done to boys and girls who may not be able to compete, therefore creating at least a mild case of the antisocial behavior. Am I off base here?
I would not agree 100%. I'd say a lot of what you said has some stigma related to it, and it's an interesting point that you brought up. In addition to sport and health psychology at Adler, I'm also the president of the Illinois Counseling Association, and at this time we are looking at the different types of violence in the media, particularly with adolescents and adults. So I wouldn't blame the jock culture for an outbreak of violence, but I definitely agree that kids who are more isolated or have less opportunity for social interactions might feel that self-esteem decrease and might have more of an inclination to act out in ways that we find to be offensive in the general public. I'd also look to society and to the child's family to see, how is this child being raised? Is this child being comforted? Is this child being nurtured? Is this child being complimented for the things that he or she does do right? So I think that there are multi-levels there. And we do really take pride in our athletes in America. So if somebody attempts to engage in that culture and is essentially kicked out by not being accepted onto a team, that can definitely trigger a snowball effect of decreased confidence and decreased desire to engage in social interactions.
You know, I one of the questions that I've been dying to ask you since we booked you for Youth Sports Now is in relation to something that I observe and something that I actually go through each year as a 23-year coach of Little League Baseball. The toughest thing for me is always the cut day. And the cut day,
it's horrible.
It breaks my heart, because the cut day, even though in Little League there are exactly what you said, there are leagues that that are under, if you will, the elite or the major league teams, so that the kids who do get cut can still play, and it's like more of a rec league. So that consoles me a little bit. But here's the thing that really gets me, Doctor, is once a child is cut from a team, I obviously feel horrible about it. And whether it be a day, a week, a month later, I always make it a point to go talk to the kids who were cut and ask them how they're doing and just see how they're hanging in there. And the thing that is almost uniform with these kids is the comment where they come back and they say, "Oh, I'm doing fine. I had a hard time with it at first, but boy, my mom or dad is really ticked off." So how many times how many times are parents actually more disappointed than the kids? And then how does that affect the child?
Oh, that is a great question. And first, to comment on your actions as a coach, I think it's wonderful that you approach the kids later on, because sometimes when kids are cut, they just don't know why. And it could be the fact that you have a bunch of fantastic kids, but you only have a certain amount of spots on the team, and therefore you can't have them all on your team, even though they have talent. So one thing that, if it's within your boundaries as a coach, is to talk to the kids who are cut and say, "Hey, listen, next time maybe focus on your hitting or focus on your pitching, whatever it is that kid might be lacking." Therefore, you give them some hope that, "Hey, coach noticed that I'm doing something well, and he even gave me tips to improve." Now, the parents are a whole different story. So sometimes, and it's so funny because I just watched this yesterday as I was watching a kids' class, where the parents will interfere with the coaching process. And you might notice when you're on the field or waiting for your kids to take the field, the parents are hovering and calling things out to the kids while they're practicing, which distracts them from listening to you. So another factor when they're cut, the kids and the parents could take it personally. And the parents might think, "Hey, what's wrong with my kid that they can't make this team? My kid's great." And then on the ride home, which some athletes will say that's the worst part of their day if there's not a successful sports day, is the ride home with the parents and the constant reminder of what that kid didn't do right on the field. So I think parents need to understand that even though the kids are disappointed and the parents might be disappointed, lay off a little bit and provide encouragement. And if you see, that's kind of the theme of what I've been saying today, is those kids really need encouragement. And I don't mean sugarcoat it, and I don't mean don't point out deficits, but I mean point out areas of improvement in addition to what they're doing well. And that's the way to build a stronger ego in these kids, so that they have the confidence to try something that they might not ace the first time, but at least they have the courage to do it because they know they'll have the parental support or the coach support if they don't succeed the first time.
Well, Dr. Karulis, you are singing my song. There's a spot for you in my dugout anytime you want. One of the rules is with my team is that the parents are not allowed to yell out coaching directions or instructions. And further, they are only allowed to yell out words of encouragement. And what I say is, we cheer for the effort, not the result. And ultimately, I lose track of that as a coach once, as you say, once those kids get in the car and then the kids actually, you know, they'll come back and they'll tell you that. So that's vitally important. But how can a youngster, and by youngster, when we talk youth sports here on Youth Sports Now, we talk pretty much the 8-year-old range, the peewees, all the way up through college. And obviously, I know your answer will have different levels based on the age group. But how can these kids overcome the disappointment of disappointing their parents versus the disappointment of being cut from the team?
Oh, that's a wonderful question as well. It's hard. And I think that's, again, I put that on the parents because it is the reaction of the parents that the child will observe. And the child will think, oh, my goodness, how did I disappoint my parents? And what can I do? I just don't know. So it's important for the parents to come back and say, you know what, buddy, it's okay you didn't make the team. Let's try again next year. But it's really about that inner confidence of the child, knowing that even though I disappoint my parents, they still love me and they still accept me and I'm still worthy. And my life doesn't, now I don't say this often, but that child can know my life does not revolve around sports. Now, of course, that statement does not hold true for a competitive athlete where life does revolve around sports. In that case, when you have an athlete who's on a traveling team or a semi-pro, when you're talking 15, maybe through 19, 20 years old, then that disappointment hit can become even more detrimental. So it's important for that child or that teenager to have other sources of entertainment and other sources of pride, which can also be academics, for example.
What do you suggest, whether it's as you as a teacher and a professor, you know, in sports and health psychology, or if it's you talking to kids and parents, what would you say, in your opinion, is the best way for first a coach and second a parent to talk to their children about being cut?
Well, I think it's important to start that conversation at an early age. So as a coach during tryouts, you can say to the kids who are there, listen, we have 10 spots on this team. That means if you've got 20 kids there, that means half of you are not going to be on this team. Just because you didn't make this team doesn't mean that you don't have talent to play. So I encourage you to continue fine-tuning your skills, gain additional coaching, and come back next year if you're not one of my 10. So by knowing up front, the kids know that there's that room for disappointment. On the other hand, that also does provide a bit of anxiety going into tryouts, and that's typically when I see young athletes for sports psychology consulting is to deal with some of that tryout anxiety.
So
for the parents,
continue, please.
Well, for the parents, it's also important for them to say and to fully explain the rules of tryouts to kids. The fact that the tryout is a time where the coach assesses your skill level and see if that skill level is a correct fit for the coach's team. And either it will be or it won't be. There's really no in-between at that point. You will be on the team or you won't be on the team. And if they're on the team, that's great. But if they don't make the team, then what's the backup plan? What other activity can the parents provide instead of that specific team?
I would love to get your perspective on this one. I have often thought as a coach and not a radio show host, but as a coach, that the most wonderful thing in the world would be, and I know it would probably create so much of a stir that we'd probably all end up in prison somewhere. But what if the leagues made it mandatory that when it comes to tryouts, that no parents are allowed to observe the tryouts? Do you think that's a good or a bad thing?
I think that's fantastic. I think that would be so wonderful for the coaches and for the athletes.
Well, it seems to me that, you know, I don't think that will ever happen, but it would certainly be interesting if we could do that, because, you know, so many times you watch the kids and they are more nervous that mom or dad is watching them than the coaches are. I mean, coaches can be intimidating as it is, as they line up on the sidelines or in the dugout or in the press box or whatever. But to have mom or dad there, you know, analyzing every move is in, at least in my opinion, a little bit more pressure than the kids need. You know, I would be remiss. I know it's not necessarily the topic that we had have been discussing about, you know, kids getting cut. But I think with your expertise and your insight, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you. All this stuff going on with the Miami Dolphins and the NFL and what, you know, is being called bullying. And obviously there's other issues involved in this, too, with racism and sexism. And, you know, the list goes on. But when we get to the topic of bullying, how would you suggest that parents and coaches approach young athletes today in trying to explain just what the heck is going on in Miami and the constant use of the word bullying in the media, and how to get the kids to really, you know, understand either A, what's going on, or better yet, how to deal with it?
Wow, that's a hot topic for sure. And it's really unfortunate what's going on. And I think something that really should be addressed within sports is the hazing and the bullying. So I've listened to news commentaries about the effects of this situation on both gentlemen, and it really just sounds horrendous. And the voicemails that were left and the accusations and this and that. And of course, the only people who know what truly happened are those two men, but it seems that there are absolute facts that there are, like you said, the racism and the downright meanness and bullying is just not acceptable. I think that there is a tradition in some sports of hazing. I think that definitely needs to stop. And parents and coaches need to talk to the kids, letting them know that hazing is not okay. And there are some traditions that exist in our culture that need to cease to exist. So that's a starting place. Another place for kids who are the bullies is to try to help them understand how they might feel if somebody made comments about them, or if people were making them feel uncomfortable or unsafe in certain situations. So I think that it's really a big role of the coaches to step in. The problem is sometimes people don't know when this is happening. So athletes know that it's going on, but they might not be willing to come forward to talk to an adult and say, hey, I just want to let you know I heard these comments in the locker room, or hey, I want to let you know we have an issue within our team. Sometimes that will come out through a lower sense of team cohesion, and coaches can pick up on that kind of thing, but they might not know exactly what the problem is. But I agree with you. It's really not okay for that to be going on.
So how do we help a young athlete? And again, maybe this is directed more towards the high school or college athletes, but how do we direct them to doing the right thing and maybe come over their own fear of stepping up and telling the coach, hey, look, this is going on? I mean, it seems to me that the peer pressure in that would just be phenomenal, but the leaders certainly rise to the top.
Sure. And I think that has to do with character development and really understanding the difference between right and wrong, and knowing that sometimes when you stand up for the right thing, there will be consequences. In this situation, the consequences for an athlete who comes forward could be being shunned by the rest of the team, being called a tattletale, those kinds of reactions. And sometimes the athletes might feel like their own selves are in danger or they'll be the next target for bullying. But we have to create a culture of standing up for each other instead of a culture of bullying each other. And again, that goes back to doing the right thing and having that strength and that ego. And when I say ego, I mean the understanding of who you are and the confidence of your skills to make that risky move to protect somebody else.
Doctor, do you think that that stories, if you will, do you think that today's youth appreciate and understand and stories are helpful to make them understand about things like being cut from a team or the bullying. So, for example, you know, the number one most cited story, of course, is Michael Jordan being cut from his JV basketball team and then look to see what he did. And then, of course, there's numerous stories about professional athletes who may have been shunned by their teams, but they stepped forward and became the team leader because they did what was right. With today's society for kids in a 24/7 Twitter, Facebook society, Instagram, you know, Pinterest, you name it, do kids still understand the stories and do they still see the benefit or the message that maybe those stories send?
I think they do. I think they're great stories. And Michael Jordan, of course, was the first one that came to mind when you started talking about that. But stories help bring things to reality. And although many people might not have the reality of Michael Jordan and all the fabulous things that he did with his team here in Chicago, I think it shows that you have to keep trying. And if you are cut from a team, try again and keep trying until you find something that works for you. I think that when people are afraid to come forward or afraid to accomplish a certain task, they feel like they're the only ones. So even though you're on a field with 20 other kids and 10 are cut, you're one of those 10, that kid still feels like he or she's the only one. It doesn't really register. So by pulling it out of their own situation and looking to a media story or looking at a book or a fable that shows some kind of similarity, the kids can see that they are not the only ones, they're not alone, and other people either have experienced that and overcome it, or have had the courage to step forward, kind of like what we're talking about in bullying. So I do think the stories can be helpful.
We have been speaking with Dr. Michelle Karulis, who is just been providing us wonderful information on bullying as well as kids being cut. She is based in Chicago and, among other things, is the president-elect for the Illinois Counseling Association. Her curriculum vitae is just unbelievable, and we really appreciate you being with us. And I guess my final and last question, Dr. Karulis, is this. Once all this stuff is settled with the Dolphins and the bullying and the outcomes, will you come back and will you talk to us more about how we teach our kids how to deal with this?
I would love to come back. Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much. And you've been joining us on the Youth Sports Hotline. And when we come back, it's time for your peak performance and getting some tips and advice on the physical side of things from our good buddy Mike Naparella. We'll be back.
Get the podcast or the live audio stream at WYSL1040.com. Agree politely. I guess
that I forgot I had a choice. I let you push me. Your local sports leader. You're listening to WYSL1040.com on the web. FM 92.1 and 1040 WYSL Avon Rochester.
There's only one Little League where the kids of summer take over the world. The Little League Baseball World Series, televised worldwide. To be part of this, join a real Little League. Sign up today. Little League rules for a reason.
Intellectually competent, loving, religious, open to growth, committed to justice. The words used to describe the young men who graduate from McQuaid Jesuit. Educating young men in grades 6 through 12, McQuaid focuses on the entire person, mind, body, and soul. There is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit. Why not find out for yourself? Go to McQuaid.org today to schedule your visit. That's McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from home. Where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are capable cared for like family, where evaluation, recovery from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
Youth Sports Now presents Your Peak Performance, topics that support the well-being of your young athlete, presented by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester.
And we are back on Youth Sports Now, and of course, it is time for Your Peak Performance, and Mike Naparella from Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training joins us. Hey, Mike, how's it going? It's been going great, and I hear you've been a busy guy today. Let's just start off right there. Should we officially call you Professor?
Definitely not. But Mike Galisano and I from our clinic were invited by Deborah Nowazinski, who is an awesome professor at the Ithaca College Physical Therapy Program, and there last year that PT class comes to Rochester to finish off their last year of training. And we were invited to perform the lab activities with them this week. So the topic was lower extremity, what's called pathokinesiology. So that's patho is bad, what's going wrong, and kinesiology is how the body moves. And so it was really a class about what we do, function.
So how does that differ from biomechanics?
Same, kinesiology, biomechanics are very similar terms. So what we're really looking at was that functional perspective of how we analyze the three planes of motion. We've talked before on the show about the sagittal plane where we move forward and backward, and the frontal plane where we move side to side, and the transverse plane where we twist. And just looking at how we both look at those joints in detail and look at them as a package unit and try to share with the kids how we can take the foundation they've learned in school and start to apply it to real life situations of a mom picking up her 14-month-old son, for example, or someone going through a golf swing or a baseball swing, and just analyzing things that can go wrong and trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together a little bit better. So the kids did really well, and it was a lot of fun.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's obviously a little bit different from being in the clinic all day at Peak Performance. It gets you out. I'm probably it gets you out of the clinic setting, but still keeps you in it with teaching. So we'll just have to start calling you a professor. Hey, Mike, you know, one of the things that we've been talking about in the past few weeks is this ACL injury stuff, and it just seems to continue with more injuries. We actually had a question from one of the listeners asking if an ACL injury is the worst injury that a young athlete can have, other than maybe a concussion. I thought that was a great question for you to jump on.
Well, I think it's sort of pertinent because we hear this all the time about ACL injuries. In fact, on the way over here on the radio, one of the shows was talking about David Watson. He had been on the Bills last year, blew out his ACL, and went to the Bills ended up cutting him after coming back this year. Now he's coming back and playing for the Jets. And so we're constantly hearing this athlete after athlete in the NBA and the NFL and all sorts of sports injuring their ACL. So it's a really commonly discussed injury. I guess I would say the answer, though, is no. It's probably not the worst injury you could do. Any injury, though, that whether it's upper extremity or lower extremity, that requires a surgery and a reconstructive procedure is a pretty serious condition. So a concussion could be mild, it could be really severe, it could be life-altering, or it could be very mild and you're going to go back and play in days. And injuries are the same way. Now, an ACL injury could be a very mild injury, but more often it's a little bit more significant. And unfortunately, very often, it's stretched out or torn enough that it actually does require surgery. But the good news for those people who've had that injury is the great majority are able to go back to athletics if they want to. And there are some injuries, whether it's a very severe fracture or much more complicated ligament injuries, where that may not be the case as often. So I don't think I would say it's the worst injury you could get.
Well, what about this whole idea, Mike, you know, with the ACL injury, or even in something we'll talk about momentarily, with the Tommy John surgery? You know, when you're doing rehab of an injury like that, what are some examples of the types of things that you find that aren't oftentimes about the actual surgical knee itself or aren't on the protocol that we've been talking about?
Yeah, and I think that that's a great question because part of this concept that we've discussed the last week or two has been this idea of protocols and how they give us guidelines. But oftentimes, you know, what we find using that biomechanical knowledge that we have in applied functional science and sort of problem solving the whole system as a package, but being able to look at those joints in detail as well, is that so often, let's say it's a left ACL injury, of course we have to know how to handle the knee. Of course we have to know how to exercise that knee and what the biological constraints are and all those sort of issues related to the knee itself. Like we have a microscope or a microscope on the knee itself. But it's so critical to understand the rest of the body, like you said in your question. And I'll give you an example of a girl we'll call her Tricia that was in recently who had an ACL reconstruction. But when we looked at her more carefully, once she was out of that early healing phase, Greg, we found that when she stood on one leg and she squatted, that one side of her foot, that side of her that she did her ACL on, her foot would collapse considerably inward, and we call that pronation. And the problem with that is that foot that was collapsing inside sort of, you know, the leg bones connected to the foot bone sort of thing. Remember that cartoon?
Right, absolutely.
Well, and that's very true. And so when her foot collapsed in, her knee tended to follow. And so it really looked like, you know, the guy, what I tell the kids is if the guy across the street from our clinic can see inside the window and see your knee doing funny things it shouldn't do, something's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very different than her other knee. And we ended up looking at her feet and actually found, even though, yes, she had an ACL, she had a very asymmetric foot structure. The ACL leg had a foot that wanted to collapse very badly and the other foot didn't. Now, can we say proportionally, one-to-one, absolutely the foot caused the knee? No, we know we can't say that with certainty. But I'll tell you what. And the parents agreed when they saw it and the kid understood it when they looked in the mirror and watched themselves. When you ask that leg to squat or lunge or land from a jump, and on my other side I look pretty stable, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to look at that leg with the overpronation that was uneven and see that leg rapidly collapse into rotation and into inward movement of the knee. That looks like an ACL. And so, boy, she did so much better once we got an orthotic on her, and that when she did start her running program and her hopping drills, that knee felt so much more stable, and she was so thankful. But in a protocol, if we get too caught up in the specifics of the injury itself, oftentimes we'll miss the other body parts. Another example we talked about before, and we'll call him Johnny, is I had a kid who did his ACL who on his other side, right, he did his left ACL. Well, his right ankle had been sprained a year or two prior. When he got further out and we did some functional testing on him, we found that on his injured knee, Greg, he could squat his knee deep enough that there was a 30-degree angle of bend at his left ankle. The ACL ankle, which was pretty normal.
Mm-hmm.
But oddly enough, Greg, we found that the ankle that he had sprained 2 years ago, and he had told us, boy, I feel fine. Nothing's wrong with that ankle. I feel great.
Sure.
He actually squatted worse on his quote-unquote good leg, and he only had about a 20-degree angle on that side. So when you'd watch him squat or lunge or land on the good leg, you would see him check up and hold back. Now, what's going to happen when that kid is running rapidly and he has to decelerate or he's jumping? And internally, unconsciously, he's sort of avoiding that right side that his body knows can't land as deeply. And he's going to repeatedly start landing on the left side more and deeper because that's the side he's got depth on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just a legitimate question. Can we say again with certainty that the right ankle caused the knee? I don't think we can quite say that. But boy, we had to work a bit at getting that right ankle to bend better. And with some hands-on techniques and with proper stretching, you know, we went, quote-unquote, outside the protocol.
Sure.
And having understood biomechanics, we could do that. We're not going to treat them like a number and say, here's the ACL list of things to do. But we've got to really try to look at their body and understand. And that's why we love protocols. As I said mm-hmm. in the blog post, if people go on the website and check those out, we can love protocols because they give us some guidelines and a foundation and a perspective as to where the surgeon may be, but we also hate them, you know, and that's just because sometimes as professionals, whether it's a physician or a therapist, it's easy to get caught up in reading the dates and the list of things to do and not stepping back, looking at the big picture. And remember, this is a human body. there's human biomechanics and anatomy going on. Let's look at the big picture and not get caught up in just that knee.
Well, somebody knew what they were doing when they connected all this together when they created the human body, that's for sure. Hey, let's move up now, knowing that we could spend the next 6 hours talking about this, but let's move up the body from the ACL and the knee up to the shoulder and the arm area. I think this is a great question. We always name things, and we've currently named Tommy John surgery, or you've got a Tommy John injury. What the heck is a Tommy? I mean, I know he's a former player for the Yankees, and yeah, I did say Yankees for those who know I'm a Red Sox fan, but, you know, what is Tommy John surgery? And, you know, I know a lot of young kids who are actually having that surgery.
Absolutely. That surgery is named after Tommy John, who was a pitcher back in the 70s.
Dating me, Mike. I appreciate that.
Well, I was around back then, too. He injured his elbow, his pitching elbow, and the ulnar collateral ligament, UCL, is the name for the ligament that he injured. And if you hold your arm out in front of you and turn your palm up, that would be on the inside. So if your right arm is held up in front of you, the left side of your right elbow is where that ulnar collateral ligament is. And if you bend your right hand out to the right, sort of so your elbow bows, so the elbow joint moves inward and your hand is outward, that's a bowing of your elbow that happens similar to what happens when you pitch. And as pitchers repeatedly over and over are whipping their arm at thousands of degrees per second, there's a lot of force that goes through all the ligaments, and the elbow is one of the places that can take a hit. Well, Tommy John blew out, like an ACL, you blow the ligament out, you stretch it, you pull it, you separate it. He did that to the elbow. And so he saw a Dr. Job, and they wanted to do something with this to try and get it fixed. And they decided to try to reconstruct that ligament. And so the procedure to fix that tear is called the Tommy John procedure.
Okay.
It would almost be like if the very first ACL that was ever done, someone named it after somebody. But the ulnar collateral ligament in the elbow was popularized by this procedure done by Dr. Job on Tommy John's elbow. And originally, it's interesting, I read something that said Job gave him a 1 in 100 chance of going back and playing.
Right.
He had it done in 74. He played until 89, pitched another 160-something games, and he retired it in 1989 at the age of 46 as a professional pitcher. So it became a popularized way to help pitchers fix that elbow.
So let's take this a step further now. I mean, not everybody's going to have the success that Tommy John had with this surgery, but what are the chances, and I'm not asking you, obviously, because every person is an individual, you know, I am aware of three kids who at age 12, 14, and 18 have all had Tommy John surgery. What are the chances of those kids coming back even to half of what they were? Is it better or worse because they're younger?
Well, certainly when you're younger, your body is in this growing mode where healing is occurring, where growth is occurring. And anytime kids have surgeries, they typically heal quicker and better than we may as adults, because that active growth process is still occurring. So that's one factor. Certainly over time now, you know, surgical techniques have advanced and gotten more technical, and the materials they use have gotten better. So in fact, these days now, and I think it was a 2009 study, and I don't remember exactly the population that was used, what ages they were, but their return rates to their sports, and usually it's baseball, those were like 80 to 90-plus percent. So the chances of getting back are very good, but certainly everyone doesn't go back. Everyone may not go back to their same exact position. Obviously, the popular group that happens to is pitchers, and that's the most violent thing you could do and most voluminous throwing you could do in the position of baseball player. So, you know, maybe some will go back and not play that position, or some choose not to. We've talked about the psychology of injury before. Some kids don't want to go back to that risk. They just want to go back and play the game.
Right. Well, I don't want to negate or to minimize the Tommy John stuff, so maybe we can continue that as we move into next week. But one thing I want to get into in about a minute and a half that we have left is, you know, you're doing some pretty cool stuff on the sports training side of things. You were telling me off air about this volleyball program or volleyball team that you're working with, that you and your wife Karen are working with at Peak Performance. What's that about?
Well, our daughter Amanda is playing for Paradigms Volleyball Club, the girls' volleyball travel team. They'll run starting in December, start practicing, and then begin doing weekend tournaments, and they'll run through maybe June or July. So there's a number of clubs in the area. And many of those clubs contract with you know, various facilities or people to help them with sports training. So it's really a well-organized process. They'll go and they'll train volleyball skills and teamwork things 2 days a week. And as part of those practices, we'll do some conditioning. So we've been contracted with the Paradigm Group to help them with the sports conditioning program. So we'll be doing injury prevention work with them, sort of sports performance work with them, helping them do the right sort of stretches, help them do the right sort of warm-up things, work on agility and footwork and quickness and core control, balance, reactive change of direction, power, the things that young athletes need, but they want to have people who are skilled and knowledgeable help direct them in the right way. So they'll spend 30 minutes of each practice, 2 days a week, doing a team session.
Very cool. Well, one of the things that I want to hear about next week, maybe we can continue the Tommy John stuff, but also I want to hear what it's like doing that with your daughter as a member of the team. I know what that's like coaching my son years ago, but that would be aging me again. Hey, when we come back on U Sports Now, we'll have a final thought or two from my dugout, and we'll finish off the show with some pretty heavy thoughts on Major League Sports.
You're listening to Youth Sports Now on WYSL.
One man come in the name of love. One man come and go. One man come here to justify. One man to overthrow.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from your home. Where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family. Where evaluation, recovery, from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference. Call Peak Performance at 218-0240. That's Peak Performance, 218-0240. We'll be expecting you.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
Intellectually competent, loving, religious, open to growth, committed to justice. The words used to describe the young men who graduate from McQuaid Jesuit. Educating young men in grades 6 through 12, McQuaid focuses on the entire person, mind, body, and soul. There is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit. Why not find out for yourself? Go to McQuaid.org today to schedule your visit. That's McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
Miami.
This week I was going to talk about youth hockey and the increase in programs across our area. I was going to provide some information about discussions with experts in Canada who are actually finding that Rochester is becoming one of the strongest areas in the country for cultivating young talent. Well, that was the plan. Then, incidents that allegedly took place in Miami caused that concept to be put on ice for another week. None of us were in the Miami Dolphins locker room to see or hear any allegations of bullying, racism, or sexism that allegedly took place. These allegations have added to my long list of issues that Major League Sports needs to think twice about in relation to how it portrays itself to the youth. Major League Baseball suspends players for illegal substance use. They hand down suspensions. After the suspension is served, the player returns to not just the regular season, but the playoffs. That player then gets praise and exaltation as he homers and helps his team get through the first round. And the player, Johnny Peralta, is rewarded with full playoff pay. What's the lesson being taught to young athletes? If you do something wrong, take the penalty, then come back to praise and get the money? The National Football League, present mess aside, is also known for sending the wrong message. During October, you couldn't turn on an NFL game without seeing pink. They proclaimed the money being raised was for breast cancer research as game-worn pink items were auctioned off. The question is, what is the cost of producing pink-colored items from the first aid tape to the cleats? And why didn't the NFL just donate that money versus paying millions to have them produced? The return was not millions for breast cancer research. CNN did a story on this a few weeks ago and clearly stated that once you take the cost of, say, a pair of Nikes that happen to be pink for just one player and then auction them off, paid all those involved in the promotion, cancer research would get the short end of that shoelace while the NFL and their subsidiaries took the bulk of the money. I'm just saying what many people think. Make no mistake that Major League Sports are giant businesses, and like any other business, the objective is to make as much money as possible. But let's not candy coat this either or put some fancy ribbons on Major League Sports to pretend that they are anything other than a business. Of course, there are wonderful programs for kids that the leagues put on, programs that teach inner city youth about golf, programs that bring obese children out onto the football field and get some exercise, and even programs that teach young baseball players how to read and write. All great programs with merit and reward. What I take offense to is the way that our Major League Sports programs take youth players for granted morally and ethically. Where are the educational programs on performance-enhancing drugs to suburban kids? Those are the kids who research shows have a higher incidence of PED use. Where are the programs that teach children about the injustices of racism, sexism, and proper treatment of human beings? You say these are all lessons that must begin at home. I couldn't agree more with you. But in our youth sports-crazed society, these are issues that need help and support not only from the major leagues, but from the college ranks as well. We have enough lessons on how to get a scholarship or make the elite team. And that's the view from my dugout.
This has been Youth Sports Now, Rochester's only radio show dedicated to the youth athlete, has been brought to you by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester, helping your young athlete achieve their peak physical performance, and by McQuaid Jesuit High School, and by TJT Sports Photography. Visit us on Facebook, Twitter, or our website at www.youthsportsnowradio.com.